Lewis, C.S. Lewis has a statement somewhere that, or he tells a story about some couples that go to a party. A number of couples go to a party, and then these two particular couples meet there, enjoy each other, conversing there. Then after the party, they go home and have some coffee and some brandy or whatever. And they talk together late into the night. And he says that all the institutions, you know, of the whole world were created so that that would happen. And that's an intriguing little story. Again, I want you people to do the talking. I'm just the excuse for getting together on this topic. What is John Doe for? I think it's very important which word, if you use a single word, which word you use at that point. If you say John Graber is for survival, and then create an educational system with that assumption, you'll probably shake the foundations of the liberal arts liberal arts college and destroy it. Perhaps. You say more generally utility. What effect would that have? To be really crazy, what would it be if education was for gratitude? You know, try that. We're free to talk about this from many different perspectives. Any response?
What about growth?
Growth of skill or growth of what?
Are you just naming one word?
Yeah, for growth.
Cognitive.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we'd have a good cafeteria there. Just throw some things out. We've got growth. What?
Seeking.
Understanding. Thank you for that one. Since I'm
mastery
of you know, we're always gonna be tacking on, you know, like of what
appreciation,
old life adjustment.
It's scary to get back so far on a question, isn't it? To say, what am I for? What is education for? A lot of me would like to start the conversation of somewhere up, you know, somewhere after, but I think we do have to drive it back to to the individual, and then say, what is he for? And before we can talk about the institutions that we can develop so that our ends are met in some way. How many teachers are here? There are a lot, I think. We have enough teachers here for university. And someone said that this was, in a sense, a university. The Holden Village was a university. Is it uncomfortable to talk about this question in such a basic way? Okay. I'm no oracle, so.
Well, it's hard for me because I think I'm going through some changes on methodology of teaching, but which also affected the content. That's kind of an explain. And I was going to try some open classroom techniques or methods, and I found it didn't work like I thought it would work. And
what age group are you talking about? Now?
Seventh and eighth grade. Pretty nice. But I wanted to talk about their relationships to each other, kind of. And I found out I needed to do some structuring. And when I started, I started to structure things. And by structuring, I think I lost some of the content that I wanted to cover, that I wanted to deal with. Because I wanted to get content. The content that I was after was where they were and what they were thinking about themselves and about how they were relating with their peers. And that didn't work. I wanted to have a platform where they could talk about that. Well, it didn't work, and so I structured it, and when I structured it too much, I went the other way and couldn't get to where they were. And so then I was feeding them instead of them feeding themselves. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm making any sense. I hadn't really thought about this until switching.
Yeah. It makes
so
sense.
I'm confused about my own goal. And so.
You wanted to be talking about them as people and their own personal problems and things like that?
Well, I didn't need to talk about their own personal problems. I was hoping more talk about ideas, which would have a personal base.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Were they embarrassed?
Well, I think so. I mean, I think at that age level, I found out they're worried about, their relationships. Yeah, with, about peer pressure and.
Mm-hmm.
And having friends, and I think some of the things were threatening. I think they were very, I guess embarrassing is a good word.
Sometimes I think we, as teachers, try too hard or underestimate their capacity to, not the word adjust, but to try to get different things out of different courses and not themselves try to put everything together in one sort of big master plan or in any kind of big integration. My students, for instance, I teach on the college level, are perfectly happy to go from a class in accounting to a course in, philosophy or something, and it isn't any big problem because they have a specific, goal in mind for each one. And what I've learned there is to, for myself, and the one course I enjoy the most in teaching is sort of Introduction to American Studies, is to tell them specifically what I have in mind and what I think can happen in the course. And say, this is, you know, the best I can do, and, you know, when I tell them something, it always gets them excited, and then I remind them at the end of the semester, I said, I'll work as hard as you will. And when they find that out, and it actually turns out that way, that becomes a very exciting sort of thing, because they actually find out that it is their course, and it isn't something, you know, they used to think that teachers were sort of, had a big secret back here somewhere, that we were hiding something from them. And if they sat there long enough and got enough zits pain, and took down enough notes, and eventually the big secret at the end of the course would be revealed to them and all things would fall in place. Well, there isn't, and when they found out there wasn't any secret because the teacher didn't have any, you know, any big, you know, surprise at the end of the course he was going to give to them, then they plunged in and we took it from each day as it went along. And I'm convinced that with certain kinds of courses, not all courses, like you have to have accounting, you have to have accounting. I mean, it's, you know, it's as simple as that. Or organic chemistry, or French 1, or whatever. But other kinds of courses where they have the chance to contribute and direct and see that it is going in that direction, and that the teacher doesn't have an absolute set of priorities to which you have, I mean, a goal at which you have to arrive, otherwise the course is a failure. That was a big thing, and especially, that was terribly hard for me to get over for a long time. I was trained in history. And unless we got from 1815 to 1860, I mean, that course was a failure. I mean, you know, even if I had to summarize the last 50 years in the last 15 minutes, we had to do it, no matter what. And, you know, I remember when I started off teaching, one of the older teachers said early, you know, you're just not going to, you really won't have to get that far. You really don't have to cover everything. But I said, you've got to get the perspective. You've got to get that, you know, that time thing. And now it isn't all that important anymore, because I'm much more convinced with you that in terms of content for the students as they go along and make it meaningful at that particular point, so that they can see that it affects them directly, and not any kind of personal confessional thing or encounter group or anything like that. I I don't like this how do you feel about that approach. That does away with any kind of intellectual, you know, analysis altogether. But I found that's the way in which I can get around some of the other problems that are facing us about where we're at and who the education is for. Because once the course becomes theirs, and we all work at it together, like I was telling you, this one device I just stumbled on completely by chance, I didn't read it in any master plan or anything, where they write essays, interpretive essays, and I grade them and send back things, and then I put these together, and then I write an essay for them and send it to them, and then they evaluate me. And that just dynamite, that just took off. I mean, that changed the course right there, because they actually knew I was listening to them and I was writing for them and I was responding to their ideas, and I didn't have some big secret there somewhere. Because we get trained in the old system. I remember Leo Strauss, wasn't he, at Chicago for a long time, and the students used to say that Leo Strauss would bring in his big bag of information and knowledge and open it up, and they'd sit there with their little bags of knowledge and put things into it. It's the banking thing, you know, for Aries. It's about the same concept. And once you can get rid of that big bag, little bag thing, then I think you've gone a long, long way. And it takes a certain amount of risks from the teacher,
mm-hmm.
a good deal of risk. But I'm convinced it's the only way to go in these kinds of courses.
Well, that's enough. It's a risk. It's a risk. Why?
Because you're vulnerable, because you've gotten away from the syllabus, because you've gotten away from knowing exactly what's going to happen at each stage in the course, that you can tell what's going to happen at, you know, 32 minutes after the hour on October 14th, and you don't know what's going to happen. And some people, this is very unsettling,
mm-hmm.
because they don't know, you know, and then 5 minutes for discussion of something in 10 minutes, you know, that, and that's one reason why it's a risk.
Yeah.
And another reason is that they might come up with some better ideas than you do.
Yeah.
And then you see, at first you worry, what happens to authority if their ideas are better? Aren't you in real trouble then? Because you don't have that old, you know, stick to hold over them any longer.
And you're messy, right?
Yeah.
You're messy.
Yeah, very messy.
That approach.
Oh yeah, I agree with all of us. Pre-meds come in, not just them, but it can happen to anybody, but the pre-meds are the worst, because they like to have a problem and then do it and dissect it, figure whatever it is, and, you know, find out what the answer is and then go home. And that's, they've solved it. And when we wind up, you know, with deciding we don't know what to decide about Willie Loman and Death of a Salesman, well, let's think about it. They don't like this, you know, they don't like that. It's messy. It's not tidy, and they can't, you know, they can't look up the answer in their cookbook.
One thing it does, though, I think we were talking about it, too, is that then if it's, say, in American studies or in history, that you're, I don't know if this makes sense, but the student in that kind of a class is thinking historically.
Yes.
Instead of thinking about history. He's thinking historically. And I know those classes which I appreciated most were ones in which I began thinking philosophically, thinking theologically, thinking visually, as Rich Cameron would say. And I think, we were talking about this, I think a person could be, say, a philosophy major and get a 4 point in philosophy and never think philosophically. That you could do that without ever having done any original thinking at all. At all.
What I'd like to ask is if there's, from the teachers here, anyone others who had good teachers, if there was anything that stands out as especially important or successful in what you did that you can remember was worth sharing. Is there...
In what the teacher did?
What the teacher did, or what you liked, or what you, you know, not that I liked, but what you learned, especially from the teacher. I remember one teacher I didn't like at all, but I learned enormously.
Yeah. The teacher that worked me the most, I liked the most. The one that just got me in there, we just sweated. I mean, we really worked, we learned stuff that was relevant. He piled it all together. He didn't just throw bits and pieces in there and not explain where they fit in. It was summed up. Worked hard, kept us going.
You know, the nebulous thing, it's a funny thing about teachers who go through in their educational career. You can count them on your hand, you know what I mean? And at the same time, it's very difficult to make a pinpoint. What made it so good? It's a mystical thing. It's sad to say that because, I mean, the people that strive to be a good teacher, and then for someone to say, well, it's just a gift, you know, already know.
I think asking someone who cares about the students, school, who's open to their ideas.
I think I had kind of a different impression of what it's going to be like, but it kind of ties into what we just said. I've worked with inner city kids a little bit, kids from Cabrini Green in Chicago. You know Chicago, that's one of the toughest places of the town. And I'm really asking education for what? What do they need to learn? But my struggle is one of balancing what I think they need to know and my right to make that kind of judgment for them, especially for kids in elementary school. But I think that's applicable too as you go on further. That's really a struggle for me, especially in the city, because that's such a different culture from what I'm used to. And even in suburbia, how do you make those kind of judgments and still rest at ease knowing that you made them? I mean, what do you choose?
You're thinking in terms of subjects that you teach them?
Well, sort of, but more like, what kind of stuff do they have to know? And how much time should I spend teaching them how to get along with each other? Or how much time should I spend teaching them about math?
Okay. Someone at...
Can I add one more? And if you're not teachers, if you're parents, what do you want your teachers to be doing? Along with what
you said, the same question.
What do you want the teachers to be doing? Not just checking up keep the kids quiet for 5 days a week.
Yeah, I think that's what we could get everybody
okay,
in.
Okay, good. And you have...
I was thinking at every level, you know, it's so different. You know, we're talking about med school, when you're med school, if you're in med school, you just, you know, all the details, and you've got to know them. don't know why, you know, we spend all this time in education when, you know, people need so badly, or someone they care about, them, you know, friends, who's walking people walk down downtown Portland, you know, that were only didn't have, you know, didn't have they care about them, and there's a real need there. And yet, you know, he can't be engrossed in that sort of thing. He's engrossed in learning when he's got a number. But I was teaching preschool in the spring, and the big thing that we were concentrating on was just helping the kids to feel good about themselves. I think that's such a beginning, you know, learning disabilities. Also, you know, if a person does not feel good about themselves, then learning is blocked. Mm-hmm. And that's the beginning. So with your inner city kids, there's a need there that you can find that you might find something else that doesn't be fulfilled.
And then how do you decide if that need is fulfilled? Mm-hmm.
What problem does that present institutions? I mean, to try to go, you know, to see the need and then to try to fill it if these are the needs. Now, the educational institution is called to do what?
Run down education, hung up on competency-based education. Try to describe all these run down competencies and all these checklists, and if you don't meet all these competencies, then you've written as a teacher, but then the parts do not necessarily make the whole.
Yeah.
And that's one of those problems. There's more to teaching than just getting those competencies. And we had, as was pointed out, so beautiful. I mean, this whole business of future, we cannot predict enough what these, particularly elementary children, will need to know, what skills they will have, to have, and so on. And so any emphasis on education for making a living, particular skills, is bound to take up someplace along the line. It's got to go in the direction of education for life, rather than education for making a living.
Yeah.
Quality of life for the world, and so, you know, it's future orientation.
Yeah. Now, you know, education for life, if that were to be done in the, say, the public schools or state universities or whatever, or private colleges or whatever, then the role of the educator would be, in a sense, to be a clergyman, shrink, mother, father, brother, sister. Right? Is there anyone in here I should ask who isn't a teacher?
I mean, well, I think you know, things are being taught all the time by all of us, you know, whether we do or do not do things we're teaching. But
you know, is should the institutions that we have for education turn upside down, or should, or are they doing something that is really important to do, but perhaps can't assume that the people who are going to those institutions are ready to take advantage of those, what those institutions have to offer? Does that question make sense?
Well, are you leading in the direction of the way I understand the idea of a life enrichment program is mm-hmm. to sort of take the time off, not expect the school to do everything, but expect that there should be something to sort of draw things together in certain stages.
It certainly relates. I mean, that my asking that question certainly comes from my experience in this program. But I'm not going anywhere, you know. That I happen to think that there are some really important things that can be gotten out of institutions the way they are, but that maybe most people who go to those colleges or whatever aren't prepared to get what's there. And I don't mean not so much not prepared intellectually as prepared in some other very, I won't talk about it with right now anyway.
When you say not prepared, I have a feeling that kind of process of this young people may look at what's happened before and feel that almost everything's been discovered, and they feel that they don't have anything to contribute. And at least I know that this process that I have occurs occasionally. You have to motivate them to the place where they can find out that they have something within themselves to say. They have a statement that they can make, regardless of what their intelligence is, or what their skill is, or what they feel they're actually capable of doing.
Mm-hmm.
You can see this happening in the crafts class. Discover something about themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You say they're not prepared, but okay, like this what we're talking about, like colleges and universities. Like I'm teaching at the high school, but don't you think it's our part of our job as teaching them to prepare them, and I don't mean just intellectually, you know, for the university, like you were saying.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that part of the teacher's responsibility also?
I think so.
Make sure that the students are prepared.
Yeah. Well, you prepared intellectually?
No, I mean otherwise.
Yeah. They're going to be stuck with it, I think. I mean, in a sense, if that isn't being done anywhere else, I think the teacher is the one that will pick up that, try to fill that need.
A big hang-up, I think, in education is that. I know, I feel a lot of teachers spend, they're so hung up in their own subject area that they don't really see them. I mean, I'm not, you know, this is real general, but see them as people, and I think a big part should be on, like, just fun and enjoyment, getting the most out of life that you can, and just human relationships and stuff like that. It goes on to what, you know, she said over there about if you're not happy with your life, you know, they're not going to be learning anything, even if you're going to have them memorize or whatever they're going to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
Education can't take place unless that person, you know. I think the things they can learn, the values of life, is kind of more important to them, and they will remember more than anything else that you can teach them in subject wise. Not that subject wise is not important also. But if you can combine them, give them a purpose maybe, relate it to their life, their subject area a lot more.
So much of what you're saying then is to again, put education on individual level so that you really know each person and not just teach subject matter so it runs. And you want to have an interest in each and every child. And in high school, at high school level and even college level.
Well,
where the student has to know that the teacher cares about them. And that's sometimes difficult when you're teaching. Maybe you have a turnover of 600 kids a day or something like that. So
I just think there are several kinds of education. And the most important kind of education is the introduction into a community of meaning and being, into a religious community. And without that, I just don't see any point in education at all. Or in being a teacher.
Okay. Okay, can you go a little more on that introduction into a community of meaning and being? And talk.
It's the introduction into, it's your question back, what's the purpose of the ministry? What was John Doe for? John Doe for what? And now there is a kind of humanistic education, there's a kind of technical education. And those are parts of our education. But the purpose of education, ultimately, is to introduce people into a community of meaning and being. And all humanistic education and all technical education should be instrumental in the light of this introduction to a community meeting be? A community or B community? I'm trying not to say that there's only one community, because that would be kind of materialistic. But if a teacher doesn't have a community of meaning, and one says that's the church, you could think of something other than the church. You can't think of a national kind of civil religion. But unless there is that vocational consciousness of a people, it seems to me you become instrumental in your teaching, and the meaning of the teaching is really lost. Mm-hmm. And if a teacher who is not trying to introduce people in that community into being, I think is lost. And all the problems of separation of church and state, but everybody teaches as a human being, whether we will it or not, through the classroom. So we got problems with symbols, but it does seem to me that one of the problems is that we don't have communities, real communities of human beings, in which to introduce people. The great value, why Holden works in the winter, in my estimation, you have a community. It's not a full community in the sense that you don't have the economic and political kind of relationship that you kind of isolate. But you have a community of meaning and being here in which people participate, and they are introduced to that. You know that, John. That's more important in a way than all the books you read and all the stuff you do, is the fact they are part of this community. And the problem in education, to me, I just said this to our business school, I say, if there isn't a community of meaning and being in which you're introducing theological students, then somehow, if you're an educator, you have to create it. So if they aren't a part of congregations that are really meaningful to them, then you can't educate theological students.
Then they've got to see one individual who is involved in it.
Particularly if your schools become instrumental in their approach to education, then you are trying to do something in an institution which is the antithesis of what you're trying to do. And I don't think education, I think it's very difficult for education to take place in those things. That's part of the problem. I don't know what happens as students who leave after the enrichment program if they don't have these continual communities which they are part of.
Are you talking about this theological student class?
No, I'm talking about babies.
So you don't agree? Do you agree with separation of church and state then?
Well, I don't believe in the kind of simple separation of church and state anymore. Mm-hmm. And I suppose in some situations you have to have parochial schools with all the problems of parochial schools. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean parochial schools. The question is, you see, that the parochialness of a school is not simply in a few doctrines. It's the whole style of life. It's the whole meaning structure which is embodied in the way you do things and what you buy and how you treat energy and how you think about everything, how you treat each other. You know, all of these things are in there.
Mm-hmm. In kind of simpler terms, it sounds like community of belonging, and there's meaning in belonging, and there's importance in belonging.
But involved the whole symbolic ritual structure of life, there's all kinds of things involved. I'm trying really to say that what education is for is introduction into the Christian community. Now, that's a problem if you're in a school situation, but if that's where you are, then I don't want to get it in just kind of doctrinal terms. lifestyle that your Christianity puts you in, that you're trying to induce people.
What about people who don't understand Christianity?
That's a problem with the symbolic ritual association with it. But you're going to introduce them into some kind of community, or you're not going to educate them.
And how about the secular community?
Well, that's why I suggested that you might have a civil religion. You might be dealing with people who would not permit you to have education using Christian symbols or using Hebraic Christian symbols, and therefore you would have to use other symbols. I imagine in Irving's development of American history, get into this kind of the symbolic meaning structure of America into which you are introducing. And you wouldn't have to necessarily, you would relate it to Christianity, but you wouldn't have to be exclusive and antagonize and isolate people because they couldn't use the symbol.
You mean do it without their knowing?
No,
I'm
not
sure.
You
can probably talk more about it than I can.
Well, you brought it up, so you how do I say it? I'm very skeptical about some parts of civil religion because of some of the difficulties that we've seen in the most recent years. But what you can do is introduce them to the concept of citizenship, and then you can raise the larger questions, you know, that go beyond simple obedience to law, and why do we need law, and then, you know, why do we need to have, you know, consensus in society, and why is it that communities can agree on certain values and certain ideals, and how are these perpetuated, how are these indoctrinated, how are these symbolized and made, you know, done through rituals and all the rest, and then you've raised the opportunity for dealing with, you know, some larger and broader, you know, issues, as I understand L, in this way, rather than simply giving sort of a factual account and, you know, I'd say a very factual account. That's the way I would. And then you could use a basis for comparison. How would this compare to another culture? Say the one that'd be reasonably familiar, like the Canadian. In what way are Canadians different? They're close enough so that we can, you know, say we can share the same geography and everything, and yet, you know, they have some different institutions, and why should they be different? And then maybe take the English, Scandinavian, German, whatever, and then get into some, you know, some really different ones. And on a comparative basis, then you started asking some rather large questions.
In other words, presenting different cultures, different religions, and opening it up for discussion, not just kind of throwing, well, I know, yeah, in the hidden curriculum, your views are going to come across, but so you're not trying to make it a Christian viewpoint, or I'm not really sure.
I would never teach without letting it be very clear what my meaning was.
Mm-hmm. Because it's going to come out anyway.
Isn't there a sense in which we have overlapping communities? County, there's a community of meaning and being a county, which we're introducing someone to, which one would. Maybe it wouldn't make much difference which religious in the restricted sense involved, not just for the sake of argument. Another community you'd be in is the community of people who are trying to develop a social life within a smaller community. Another community is the worldwide church. Another is the specific religious community. Another is a community of alumni, whatever. I mean, there isn't just one community of meaning and being that any one of us can be in. There are more of them.
Ultimately, I think you are part of many communities, but only one community of meaning and being for which you will stake your life. Which embodies the ultimate for you and embodies the purposes for all these other communities.
Okay, but now are you saying education is for that one? Or that there are
ultimately, it gets its root and its meaning and its direction and its substance out of that word. And there are a lot of technical things that go along and are necessary. It's like asking, what is the purpose of America? Until you determine the purpose of America, you don't know what you want to do with America. You don't know what education should be for.
But I'd argue that there, in a lot of instances, doesn't make any difference what the purpose of America is. That there can be smaller communities that can go on and do very well, as long as it's America in general is going reasonably well. And likewise, the church in general can be heading in a direction that you or I might not like, and yet within the church we can have a very growing many communities.
Probably in the next foreseeable future there'll be no way to have America going very well. And the only life we'll have is life in many communities, which sustains us through some very difficult times.
I really disagree with you, because that's like creating a machine that that works, but doesn't work for anything. I mean, you know, it just it goes through its pulleys or sockets and all that stuff, and it runs fine. It just sits there and keeps running.
Rube Goldberg sort of mousetrap.
I'd like to just interpose one thing in terms of meaning and being as far as elementary school is concerned, because I don't think you can always assume that you can introduce small children in a public school to a specific Christian context, certainly. And I'm not sure that I would go on to rally on both of schools, but I do know that I think one of the biggest problems in the elementary schools in terms of this very kind of climate that you want to produce is the antagonism of the, I hope there aren't too many school administrators here, but I mean, I don't have anything against specific people in that group, except in Minneapolis, who wanted to change the curriculum of social studies from the first grade and on up, and it became psychologically oriented around the ego of the child, and it never went beyond that. I mean, until, you know, maybe they got into a worldview by the time they got into high school, and maybe they didn't. Now, I think there's something to be said for the way in which you teach children in the first grade. If the first thing they always relate to is my neighborhood, my postman, my grocer, my this, my that, when do they ever get any concept beyond that? And we had a big argument on it, and they said, psychologically, this is the correct way to do it. The only way to teach children, the only way they relate. Well, I mean, I don't know. I'd like to hear some of them. If you feel that, because I think this is also part of introducing children to a community that's larger than the individual unit.
One of the things, wouldn't that type of approach to educating elementary school kids or high school or whatever is that you'd get an ever more subtle old Adam, it would be what you were creating, and that you would take a old Adam that had certain blatant difficulties, and then you would make him a subtle old Adam, a subtle fallen person. Does that make any sense in that?
We're my friend from New Guinea. I was just talking to before dinner.
Carol?
Yeah.
Is she here?
No, not Carol, no, the, yeah. Okay, she was saying, she, you know, she's been in New Guinea, she's had a global experience, but she's teaching in a little, very small, closed-in lumbering town in Wisconsin, where hardly anyone ever leaves. Now, these kids are in a community, and they don't really care to leave or look beyond their community, and apparently that's meaningful to them. Now, her objective as a teacher is to broaden their horizon so they embrace the world community. And that's the point now. If people have a community that's meaningful to them, apparently these people in the little lumbering town are pretty satisfied rolling around in their own little circle. How much is it the job of the teacher to expand the community in which people may be fairly comfortable? In other words, isn't part of the job of the teacher to make people uncomfortable with communities that are too small?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
The problem that we're left with, I think, is the fact trying to determine what the people were trying to reach, what their berufung is. The reason I chose that word, anyone that knows German knows that that's a verb for calling, and in particularly God's calling. And the reason that I use that term is that Wartburg College has gotten a new vocational program just started, just as basically started this past year, so it's still in its fledgling stages. And it is that trying to determine what is God's calling for me, for you. And I think what Al was saying, what Earl was saying, kind of reminded me of Stringfellow in his book, The Feather of Death, has the chapter on the Christian as social pioneer.
I don't know that.
And that is the thing that I think that we're always left with as teachers or students, either one, is what is God's calling? And to Al, all I can say is we're still all part of that one community in Christ. And I don't know how we're going to divorce ourselves from that, how we're going to move out of that community. And unless we can become Christian social pioneers some way, I don't know what's going to happen. I've still got a lot of mixed emotions and feelings as myself, but...
Are you talking about getting out of that community? You mean reaching people who are not in the Christian community? Are you talking about...
Well, I think that what... I think what was Stringfellow was trying to say is that we do have to go beyond the sacred community, and we have to go into the secular world. And it is only by grace that we're going to come out with anything of any substance whatsoever that might have any kind of meaning or feeling for any of the recipients.
I'd like to raise another way of looking at it. Couldn't you look at even a very young child entering a community which you can be a part of all his life? He's a part of the world, and he's a part of something that's very big, which he begins to learn about in very small increments, from the baby crib right on out. It's an act of constant exploration and broadening and reaching out. And it isn't too long before he can know that this is God's world. And then this is something he never has to unlearn. He keeps building on that. And so if you start the right base, and if you start it with something that can never be limited, can always grow and expand, then And he is in a community of meaning and being from the very first concepts. And then you simply build on this. And learning has to be something that you want to explore, you want to learn more, and you can do this in any realm or all realms. And finally, what you want to produce, hopefully, is a person who is well-rounded in all things, including his understanding of his God and Creator and the entire world in which he lives. I once put it into these words. I don't know that this really sums it up, but what you really want is for the individual to seek and finally find his highest Christian potential. And all learning relates to that. And all teaching relates to that.
What does the highest Christian potential mean?
Means exactly what it says.
What about, okay, say they're the teacher who was Satan worshiper and had the same feelings for you in teaching your child, that was the highest ideal, the highest goal. How would you feel about that person teaching your child as, or maybe I'm getting the wrong impression. I thought that you were saying that it would be, that it's good to teach a child Christian values and ethics right away.
No, I didn't say anything about
you
that.
You didn't say that? I thought you were talking on that one. I guess I have a problem with, you know, I want the kids that I will someday be teaching to learn that. I want to share Christ with them at the same time. You know, what about their values and their views? I have a hard time with that, especially after some human relations classes.
I have some human relations classes too, and I was very frustrated by them. And I think Christian educators are in a very frustrating position, because if we are really confessing Christians, then we're saying that, okay, if I'm going to face this child as an individual, then the best way for him to cope in the world is what I found to be the best way, the only way that I can cope in the world. So how can I tell him? We learned all kinds of things in human relations about approaching a child, and all the time I kept thinking, but that's not the best way. The best way is for me to address that child as a Christian, and yet I didn't. I feel kind of tied in a public education system. And so then I suppose your community is meaning and being. And yet we have to be a Christian community, but how do we?
But yet we really need Christians in the secular world. You know, that's what
I'm saying. Yeah, I don't know how we.
Well, it involves a very intricate theological question. If you're introducing people to Christ, you're introducing people to creation and nature, which is a much, it's just a full forward notion about the whole meaning of everything that's involved, as over against the symbol. Since Christ is the Word which really establishes the order of the creation. So that I think we got a lot of problems in just using the symbol and thinking by using the symbol we dealt with community. That's one problem. The other is using the symbol in relation to a full-on doctrine of creation, just based on all rest of the biblical literature. And so I don't have any formula, no answers, nothing that's going to solve the dilemmas. But I do have a question. I think, John, you put the question right. That education has to begin with that question of for what? What is the meaning of existence for me? And to what extent can I deal with other people in terms know, something which we can share in common in the meaning of our existence, and together live it, experience it.
Your distinction now between the symbol and the substance of it, are you suggesting, I mean, are you saying that the important thing is the substance that's shared and not necessarily the symbol?
Well, I may be very careful with that, yeah, because I think symbols participate in reality, and therefore they carry together. So it's hard,
but in a secular situation, you might carry the wrong reality.
Yeah. But certainly, many Christ, for many people, I think, that is my personal opinion, carry a community of meaning and being which I would have to reject in terms of their understanding of creation and meaning of creation.
When you say meaning and being, I was just thinking, trying to come up with a real easy thing. Is that mean, you know, that would that community be addressing the so what question as that was always in the back of the mind while you were dealing, studying the what and the how kind of things?
Well, I don't want to overdo it, but if you read Illich's book on the medical nemesis, he raised all kinds of questions about medical education and about the whole healthcare system. Seems to me that the Christian's got all those kinds of questions in the back of his mind while he's becoming technically competent. But he's got a lot of questions about the meaning of competency, because I don't think there's any universal agreement on the meaning of competency in any area. Some areas there's no agreement.
But I just wonder that.
I'm thinking since about probably 90% of us teach in public schools, and maybe there are about that many that really don't have lots of background, maybe our actions can speak louder than words or even other types of symbols. We've talked about what made a good teacher, and we talked about how when the teacher really cared for a student, if you really care, you're going to also be trying to give this meaning. But again, it might be through you're caring for the student, so you have to take time to know the student. And by so knowing the student, you're going to take time and talk and try to show them that there is a place in life for them which does fit into God's plan. But when you're in a public school, you can't do lots of so-called preaching or even uttering God's name very often without, in some cases, really getting yourself in a grand mess, yourself and possibly the student and quite a few other people. But you still, by your actions and your concern for the child, at any age level again, can be giving definite direction to the child, I believe.
Thank you, too. I just think of the song where they will know we're Christians by our love. And that seems to point me in the next direction. We don't have to really hit the nail on the head with the symbols, but can direct in a very simple way by this direction.
I'd agree with that, except that there's a danger, not a danger exactly, but there's a real frustration, as somebody said earlier, in that you do direct them and they're up to the generous. I found my students would say to me, "Mr. Holly, you're different," but they thought I was different because I was weird, like they didn't know exactly what, they knew something was different about me, but they didn't know where that difference came from. And in a public classroom, you're not at liberty to say, "Well, I'm a Christian, you know, and this is what that means to me." And so there was a great sense of frustration where maybe I had 200 students, and in the course of the year, I would get to know, I would try to do what what you're saying, get to know the students, relate to them, you know, try to understand where they were coming from and give them a sense of where I was coming from.
But I found that in the years I taught that if that really occurred at any kind of meaningful level with more than 10 students out of the 200, I felt like I'd really done a good job. The students who I really felt I communicated what my community of meaning and being was. And so while they may know we're Christians by our love, well, they may know we're something by our love, but they might not know exactly what it is in a public school classroom.
Well, I'm thinking now, sometimes it's very much impossible to actually talk to the students, but I'm thinking of one particular teacher that four of my kids have had, and every last one of them called that the favorite teacher. And I know she didn't have time to talk to individuals that much in her class, but she happened to teach the English subject. Very seldom would they hand papers or have papers checked that she didn't have maybe two words, good work, or very interesting, or, you know, it's something to make it personal. It takes more time to do that. And another thing that is going to show my age is when I first started teaching umpteen years ago, at least in the community where we were living, it was sort of, you know, you had to be a teacher round the clock. Not just subject matter, but the teacher had to sort of set an example by the life they led in the community and all as well. And this, to me, has really changed in the last decade. And I sometimes think this talks to the kids quite loudly, too. Now, if you're in a huge city, you know, you go to your home and nobody knows where you are anyway. But if you're living in a small community and your life doesn't again, actions are speaking louder than words. It's how you take part in the community, your actions after school hours, and really, what do you care about your kids? What kind of examples do you set for the kids? Sometimes you teach more outside of the classroom than you do in.
I don't, just to pick up on that, and not so much outside after school or anything, but outside the room, I know that the students that were, you know, when, you know, the most important learning of, or most striking what am I trying to say? Yeah, some of the best teaching happened and the best learning happened in 30 seconds outside the classroom door, when the reality that I was in the class, you know, went with me out the door and someone came and asked a question, and bing, it was, you know, I could meet him one person at a time, you know, not so much, and in many ways, class is sort of an excuse, you know, for that little place outside the door as you leave for somebody to come up and ask you a question of, you know, out of, that is very particularly his, and to have you speak into it, speak to it.
You're talking in one-to-one. Somebody needs one-to-one.
Yeah, and over a period of time, many, many people would come up at that time, and years later, that's what they remember most.
I'm still not sure, though, if that's enough, because very humanistic teachers can do that sort of thing. And what might come up there, that's not necessarily more Christian, because you can be humanistic without being a Christian, and yet if our concerns are really as deep as we want to think they are for the children or for our pupils, then they have to know that we are not only humanistic teachers, we are Christians.
I'm raising the question, do they have to learn that from you?
Oh, maybe not. But I think, I don't know, I just would like to feel very free to be able to do that.
Well, sure, but I mean, the vocation is such.
But I think if you're a Christian, it will show.
It will show. Something will show.
Yeah.
But that something may not be defined, and that was the frustration for me. Because I was getting the credit for being a great guy, you know, or a jerk in a lot of cases. But if there was any credit being given, it was, hey, that Mr. Holly's really a good teacher. Well, okay, but there was something behind it that a lot of the kids didn't see or didn't know about.
Remember, you'll never win them all. Put it that way.
Sure, and that's, you know, sure. Right, but you shoot for 100, you get 2, and you know, there you got some.
And there again is that little story about even in Sunday school, sometimes you come home and you feel like, oh boy, just not getting a thing across. But there again, if you believe you've helped, well, so-called plant the seed, let the Holy Spirit do it. You don't see it when you plant your garden either. It sometimes takes several years for it to sprout. And we don't always see the results. Immediate results.
Everything you said, I agree with. I mean, I think you and I would probably, if we were teaching together, we would agree on almost everything. I'm just a little more frustrated at this point than you appear. You're more willing to make peace with yourself than I am.
Well, I know that school has become more frustrating for teachers over the past, again, possibly decade, because suddenly, everybody had to consolidate. There was no good school unless it was monstrosity, wrong word. Anyway, too large, and you just couldn't, financially things weren't going well unless you had just a huge school. And I think sometimes it just became mass production and we forgot all about the students. And you just, as teachers, became part of a machine. And like it or not, my number 106s are coming right now, and so here they come, and the bell rings, and then my 111s are coming. And, you know, you don't have time to know them as you would like to. And if you're in a large city, again, you can't possibly know the backgrounds of the kids, and there's just not a way that you can get to know them as individuals without... I don't know, just not enough time.
Karen?
Well, it's very difficult because now I can't speak in my mother's tongue, you know?
Yeah.
And, so perhaps I'm expressing myself too strongly. First of all, I would say I just feel like being in a kind of monastery or nunnery, that you can say that what you were saying before, that you wanted to. The child to see God in the way you did, didn't you? If I understood correctly. I mean that you were not living in a very secular society, and from a Danish point of view anyway, I think we are more, we have to keep in mind all the time what you were saying, that we are serving the parents in a way, teaching their children, and what the parents want, that's so many things, but we should present to the children different possibilities. And I wonder if you in this country would like, if there was, for instance, a burning communist wanting to express their things, like you were talking about, you wanted to express that you were a Christian, etc. Because that has been our problem lately, that some parents have been afraid that their children have been indoctrinated by some teachers who were seeing a communist or Marxist's view and everything. And I should be very careful not to preach in the schools, even in religion. We teach Christian religion in the Danish schools, but I think that we should let the when we read parable, it says that we should try to find out what it says, but not preach. We should let the parable preach if we have done it in the right way. And I think that some teachers, if they always say something about God, it would be just the opposite. And we found that then. Well, it's very difficult.
No, no, it makes sense. It, like, I once, you know, talking to somebody who said that we ought to have praying in the schools again, and then there's this feeling that, you know, if, you know, can you imagine the prayer that we could get a vote on? You know, that is acceptable to a majority? And you want that prayer. As a Christian, you want that prayer.
But in every sense, every textbook you mention is full of prayer. For some way of being.
There's
no way to avoid.
Yeah.
The daily prayer, too, is early John reminds us.
I would be hesitant to have someone think that they have seen what Christianity is in the prayer that, you know, 62% of the people would vote to say is okay in the school, and that's, you know, that's a Christian prayer. See, that's what I'd...
Unconsciously, and without our being aware of it, a way of interpretation of human existence is presented whenever you read any book. I never read a book without, unless it's very technical, anything that's humanistic. Almost all of them have some interpretation.
Sure.
Sure. Of human relations and the meaning of existence.
Yeah.
And so it isn't that we don't give an interpretation. It's simply that we somehow want to avoid some of the explicit interpretations. And so what we do is either make our education neutral, which really, in my estimation, destroys education as meaningful. Or we let the meaning come in surreptitiously or by virtue of all kinds of things which we don't recognize consciously. At least that's the way I feel.
Yeah. Well,
how do you deal with it now? If you were in, like, in Denmark with a very strong Communist Party and a number of people who are communists,
well, I think how do you deal with another interpretation? You may actually have to have schools which give an interpretation with which you could be sympathetic enough. The separation of church and state and our public school system depends upon a basic unity in our culture which we agree upon. And then you can make your school a neutral. I mean, because you've got a basic unity and you've got a basic agreement. And I was teaching, I had some school of 700 people in Snyder, New York. And I backed up to $1 million school system. Those kids were in that school from 7 o'clock, 7:30 in the morning until 6 at night. And when did I get it? I had 1 hour a day. Now, if you can't get that school system...
You didn't get them 1 hour a day?
No, 1 hour a week.
A week, yeah.
A week. And then I worked like hell and got them a few people a few other hours. You know, I did every conceivable thing to get them time, just time. Now, the school system isn't providing interpretation. Or if it's providing another interpretation, I don't know. I think you really don't have any way of getting established this mindset, this interpretation, this spirit set. I don't mean mind in any simple sense. I mean the whole being. The school set the way of being.
I think we're going to get back to Rudy, what Rudy said too, probably pretty soon in this conversation too. Yeah.
Now, I think the concept is very clear when you look at education. The Soviet Union, for example, I was there just a short time that we were there as educators, talking to other educators, and all of
in the literature that you look at, and everything they say about themselves is that their purpose of education is to form a mindset, a particular mindset. And they're doing a pretty effective job. They talk about having a purpose for education.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they've got it, they follow through. It's very monolithic. The whole system is monolithic. But they know what they want to do. They want to cultivate that mindset and communism, and they do it.
We do that here too. I think we do that here too.
No, I don't think we do. I don't think we are agreed in our system on what we want to do.
Okay,
that's what I'm saying by the contrast. The Soviet Union is this organized because you know, it's a kind of government where you do this. But in our freedom, we haven't really made up our mind now what we want to do. In the past, we have sometimes, you know, make good decisions. But I think these recent years, we have not had clearly stated purposes for public education, and that's where part of the problem comes in. But I would want to assure talks with some other people. I think Christian teachers do make a difference. I mean, I've been in the education game long enough to know that you don't have any feedback.
Yeah.
And that I will do. I think that the younger the child, the more immediate feedback, you know, in kindergarten children, will come right back at you. It's just beautiful in terms of that. And you can't always tell how far your influence goes. And I think it can be very frustrating if you teach in middle school doing an odd kid thing. But some of that feedback you get later. And I mean, you do influence people.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, by the grace of God, when you don't know how.
Yeah.
So hang in.
Yeah. I know what Karn said about Denmark, the fact that you have you might have a communist teacher who, you know, feels free to instead of let some of that worldview is going to come through, he can consciously attempt to make the communist connections, you know. He makes an attempt to do a lot of what it is done some automatically. He can't cover it up. And that would create a, you know, not just like communists, they say, okay, I was a Christian 8 years ago. I wouldn't want that Christian teacher teaching about that I was 8 years ago teaching about Christianity to any of my kids now. Because I was, you know, 8-10 years ago, I thought being Christian was being nice, you know. And I wouldn't want that taught as Christianity, because then a child can think that they've made a choice, seen the real good, especially if they like me, if I got a nice personality, they say, that's it. That's a terrible thing to do, I think. Al, you said something about I can't go along with certain of these communities, and you know, or certain, I think, certain Christian meaning and being, understandings of meaning and being, and if it were all right for all those, for all the different, you know, beliefs that people hold religiously, whether it's John Birch, communist, a Lutheran of one kind or another, that they could preach that in the classroom, be really scary.
I think we're in a position where we're going to have to do a lot more education of our kids. They're going to have meaningful education.
And there you're back to Rudy, aren't you? What he was saying.
I'm back to lifestyle.
Yeah, yeah.
And part of the idea of the Seattle community and the discussion of it is to provide a base out of which you could go to the university and some continuing community out of which you could go into the university and milk it.
Mm-hmm.
Since it isn't going to provide a lot of things. There are things, there are teachers,
yep,
all kinds of opportunities in most schools.
Yeah.
But it's a kind of
our school in many ways would be modified. Our good school would be modified, I think. But you can't get education, but it has to be done with some support. So that, it seems to me, we're going to have to find ways of being much freer by our own education for our kids.
Yeah, and it...
And I don't know how you do it. You do by changing your lifestyle, not being quite so involved and freeing up some of your community to do this sort of thing. Mm-hmm. I think it sounds very parochial and like returning the tables back, but I think that's the future for if you want education to introduce people into a community of meaning and being, which is full orb.
Yeah.
Which deals with the complex issues, how you live in our society with meaning and significance.
Yeah. And you need a community of individuals to support you in, who support your belief in that certain reality, right? And then you can, you have this central core, I think, that Rudy is talking about, but you can't do it, just one person can't do it by himself. But then you go milk. You go milking, and I think that's something you're talking about too. Get in there and milk like crazy.
I don't know how far the conception of this new dormitory at California Lutheran goes, but it's a dormitory. Rudy, you have to speak about it. A dormitory that is involved in a lot of change in lifestyle, as I understand it. All kinds of questions about lifestyle. Where the dormitory is going to be the focus for at least some of these kinds of questions.
That's at the college level. My point is that this goes on from the cradle to the grave. And 4 years in college is a minor part of the total. Point is, you keep building and keep exploring and keep the concept of learning and the desire to learn. And then it's up to the church, again, certainly in this country, to provide a perspective. And we have chapels, and we have churches, and we have campus ministries. And we have ways of getting at this through the church. But the church must be a model, in a sense, in adding the additional dimension perspective to what can be gotten in the public school. And we can't expect the public school to do what we expect should be done in the church, and vice versa.
I agree with that, and maybe, I don't know, if I'm just giving up an idealistic system, or like you're saying, Christianity would have to be a school system, but I think it has to be in the church, and I don't think the school, I think we'd be worse off, in a way, if we did teach Christianity and stuff like that. I think if they come to it on their own, they'd be a lot better off, and I think, I don't know, I've just only been teaching like 1 year, so I have no experience, but I never realized what an influence I have, like, in other people's lives. Like, you said you feel old that you, influence on students' lives. Sometimes I feel my students know more what I do than I do myself. I'm teaching in a small community. And so, you know, like, everything I do, I feel like I'm more, they're always watching me. And I really do. I believe that little thought about the, you're a Christian, because I think your views or your humanistic thing or your Christianity is going to show, I think. And I think at this point in our society, realistically, that's all we can do is our actions. And, man, if I can just reach them through some humanistic values or something like that, and I don't even get the Christianity part, to me, that's really accomplishment,
You see, you're a model, whether it's for good or bad.
Right.
it's either one or the other, or a mixture. But every teacher is a model. And the student who is anxious to learn from you is going to be pretty perceptive in discovering what kind of a person you are and where your values are and so on.
And
as long as you're open.
And I think, like somebody else was saying, like sometimes when you go into teaching, you think it's like an 8, like if you're coaching 8 to 10 or a job or something like that, but it's not, because like you said, 30 seconds outside of class, you do something that's, you know, either way. It's, you know, that person, you can gain respect or lose it.
And you
can
kill
seconds.
It for a year in just a few seconds outside the door.
Right.
And it's going to speak loudly.
You can try
more loudly than you do from the front of the class.
You can try everything in the class to reach the student. You know, total disaster. 15 seconds outside of class, and she's got a total different view of you. Maybe not even your class. Maybe she still hates PE, but she likes you as a person. And then she just changes, you know, everything she tries.
We're talking about motivation.
A purpose.
Living.
For,
When to sneak something in, it might be neat to have a whole session on, they will know we are Christians by our love. You know, because I have a heck of, we won't do it tonight, but I have a heck of a time with that. I don't like that at all, that song, you know, and it would be fun to talk about it, because I myself don't have the subtlety to know when God is loving me and when he's, you know, and this, having it being reduced to, they will know I'm a Christian because I'm nice, it just,
you can get lukewarm Christians
on it. Well, it really starts to go. I don't want my being a Christian being dependent on how much someone else can perceive love in my actions.
Okay, but I think the way a lot of it means is sort of a.
It's a neat, you know, it'd be fun to. That is another another thing. Yeah. Yeah. We started at 9. What time is it now? Oh, that's, we're a half hour past.
I think that the one thing that is always worried me about, because of the fact that we are concerned about a Christian witness coming out, and I just feel so strongly that's never an excuse for not having the fullest possible kind of content for the kind of classes you have.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a pious hope or prayer take over in, you know, and as you said, the Holy Spirit doesn't take care of all the weeds and, you know, in the gardens and stuff. And I think sometimes that. The teachers, some of the teachers that have meant the most to me, I'm sorry to say, were not, as far as I know, Christians. They really inspired me to learn and to want to learn and to want to learn, and gave me such an intellectual curiosity. I mean, they really spiked it. And I had a lot of Christian teachers who really pushed it down.
Yeah.
Now, maybe that's a wrong definition of Christianity, certainly from what Rudy said, you know, I would agree with Chris that's you know, that's the wrong way to do things, but that does happen.
Yeah. And the great knock, remember, C.S. Lewis is the greatest teacher of C.S. Lewis was a, you know, complete atheist and just...
Well, Dorothy Sears, Professor Disney.
Yeah.
Chaos, I think, very well. The other thing, we mentioned health professions here. This is, of course, the real problem. But when you and I are laying on the table, or we have an acute illness, we don't like things messy. We don't want them to say, I got to think about this for a couple of days. and right now, the complexity of the heart is such that I just do not have them look at me until they're over 30 years old, and they're just at least finished with education, and they take beyond 30 years now. I'd like them to be 40, so they can actually experience. And this, of course, is very difficult, isn't it? That I don't care what their worldview is, but I sure want them to know all there is to know about what's wrong with my wife. And,
That's right.
Science is science, and scientists have worldviews, and let's not mix these things up.
I don't know any science that isn't the science of somebody who's written.
Science is human activity, and it's a particular kind of investigation. It doesn't deal with worldview. Science is another field.
Well, the social sciences seem to be dealing with worldview, you know, a great deal, but the...
But they're not scientific.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Well,
that's right, because the point is to start the discussion, not to end it.